This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important like, for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of those them things. Are hungover
they love
when they come into the gym.
And training.
The flavors are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one was orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly, they just pull it out of the sea.
78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
The cleanest.
Special sea. And also, they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans. They help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people. So we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15. And you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix. Seawater. Sea hydration. Extra slurps. Is that
Sorry,
you drink all the time?
Super slurpy. Hey guys, before we get into this episode of Before Lights podcast, here at Before the Lights, we are super supportive of all our friends who are actors and their strike with the Screen Actors Guild. Therefore, we've held on to some of these episodes until the strikes are finished. So some of the stuff they say might be dated or it might have already come out, but we're super grateful for the time they've given us and it's still super interesting chat. So yeah, have a listen and enjoy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Canavan. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between.
On this episode, we got the pleasure of speaking to Connor Swindells.
Connor Swindells, which, yeah, we have to make sure you say Swindells.
I'd stick around to the end. You get to hear a little special something about Dave, how to actually say his name.
Or spell his name.
Yeah, but it is Swindells.
It is Swindells. Connor's amazing client of ours. He grew up boxing to quite a high level, mm-hmm. and then became a great actor. You'd have seen him in SAS Rogue Heroes and
Sex Education.
Teased his appearance in Barbie, although he couldn't even talk about it himself
at the time. Yeah, couldn't talk about it, but it's all been
released now. So there's a little teaser in that,
and a really important and genuinely interesting conversation about poo, which is not what you think it is.
No, it's not.
Connor actually works a lot with bowel cancer charities to raise awareness and to educate people onto what to look out for.
He does, and he educated us, and it was really, really insightful.
Plenty more acting chat, gym chat. And a little bit of poo chat.
A little bit of poo chat. Everyone loves a little bit of poo chat.
Anyway, without further ado.
More ado.
We're back. And we have with us the one and only Connor Swindells or Swindells?
Swindells, very
Swindells,
good.
Swindells, nailed it.
First time, not often.
I saw it on your Instagram the other day. There's a big capital D there.
You've
going, it's Swindells, everybody.
I hadn't even noticed that.
Oh, here you go.
I'll pay
well
closer
done.
Attention.
That was good, well done.
I just had that feeling coming off you. That's how you'd pronounce it.
I'm a devil.
So my name, Hasty, gets Hasty. It gets all of the versions, and I'm like, come on, just say it right.
Yeah. We used to call you Pasty, didn't we? For your love of pasties.
That's a good one.
There you go.
That's a good one.
So Swindells, we'll go with that. Swindells.
Well, we'll go with it because it's his name. Yeah. We've got Connor Swindells of Sex Education, Vigil and SAS, Rogue Heroes, is that right?
Rogue Heroes, yeah, very good.
Very good. I'm nailing this so far.
You are. Man. You're doing really well.
Let's start talking about like how you came to us, because you're quite a recent addition to the BTL family.
Yeah.
And it involved an interesting injury.
Yeah. I dislocated my knee doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Such a horrible sound. Like, just to say I dislocated my knee is like such like a...
It was very painful. Yeah.
Was it the kneecap or the whole knee
it was
joint?
The kneecap, yeah.
Okay. That's enough of the knee. It shouldn't be where it went.
Because I was meant to start filming 4 days later and I just was thinking, this is a complete disaster. And he called an ambulance and then 2 minutes later he was like, yeah, they're not coming.
Did it just sort itself? Did it go back in on its own?
So I stayed on the floor for about 15 minutes holding my knee. And I figured if I held my knee in a perfectly stable position where I didn't move a single muscle, the pain would sort of subside. So I was like, I was in this weird twisted position holding my knee.
So is the kneecap shaking out at this point?
Yeah, it's on the,
so it's on the side.
It's on the outside.
Yeah. I've seen one of these happen. We used to do like first aid for rugby teams.
Yeah, it's like a super common, like anything where there's like studs in your shoe.
Yeah.
Turn on them. Yeah. So eventually the guy that did it was sort of there holding my leg, supporting its weight and staring me in the eyes. And I was saying, don't move my leg. And my coach said, I'm going to have to drive you to the hospital. And he came over to sort of pick me up and I screamed. There was a lot of screaming. And then another guy from the gym came in who I guess was just sick of hearing me whine. And he came in and he was like, right, up we get, and just grabbed me and pulled me up. And as they pulled me up, I went, I'm going to pass out. And then they carried me maybe three paces and then the gravity.
Yeah, it went back. Generally speaking, it wants to be where it should be. Like, yeah, it doesn't want to live on the outside.
And as soon as
forever.
It went back in, the pain went
yeah. Big time.
Well, because it's like your whole body is experiencing something that just shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Like, that bone shouldn't be on the outside of your leg. Mm. And as soon as it's back, my elbow. Yeah, George dislocated my elbow.
Dave's elbow.
Ran me over on a motorbike.
With a motorbike.
We were racing motorbikes at the time. Like, on a track. On a dirt track, not in the street. Okay. I fell off in front of George's front tire. The whole thing came apart like 2 inches.
But that sounds like a break.
Well, no, you'd think so. And then when I got to have the x-ray, I was like jacked up on morphine and stuff. And I'm lying in the bed and I could hear the doctor going, whoa, hey, come and look at this. And like called like 5 people in. And I was like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? And he just went, I've never seen this before. He's like, 9 times out of 10, if not more, there's a fracture to some extent.
Yeah.
My bone's just like gone, pop. Like just completely separated.
And they put it back in?
They gassed me up.
It was so fun.
I was completely away with the fairies.
That didn't hurt when
gas
they did
and
that?
Air. Gas and air, you can feel it, but you forget it as soon as it's happening.
Oh, interesting.
So like, you know that it hurts, but you don't care. I was like cloud cuckoo.
How old were you?
This was...
2018.
Yeah, it was not that
December 2018.
He was playing the gas and air pipe like a kazoo at one point.
He went play it like a trumpet. And I thought... Literally, that's what he meant. So
no, he meant
just going,
breathe in.
And then he's like, no, you've got to breathe it in so it actually does something.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, but it's definitely put me off doing jiu-jitsu for the time being. I have to go back and do it because otherwise I've been beaten by it. But
I'd go and do that dirt racing again because it was really fun. The problem was I just got too... There was a guy that we know who's genuinely good at it and I started trying to chase him.
And how long did that take to heal? That's just fine now.
Remarkably quick. So there's no break at all. I think I played like football or something after like 6 weeks. So I probably could have done it sooner, I reckon. Yeah. That's enough about my joints.
Yeah. But now you're training normally with us.
It's great. It's the first time for a long time that I've actually committed to exercising. I talked to you about this before, but I used to be a boxer and sort of expended my tolerance for exercise at quite a young age.
Did you kind of fall out of love with it a little bit?
Yeah, I fell out of love with it. There was a couple of wake-up calls that I had towards the last few months of training where I was just like, God, this is a hard, hard life. Mm. And ultimately, for most boxers, not very rewarding
at all. Yeah.
So unappealing.
And training so hard.
Just to get to the...
Just to get punched in the head every... Yeah. You know,
Did you ever think of it like when you started, was it something you wanted to pursue like that before you decided to... take a pact in.
I think you sort of get to a point where you all of a sudden you can see the path ahead. Some people maybe with a level of delusion go, I can be a world champion or I can be in that top 10 and maybe some of them go on and do that and that's great, but I was like, I'm never going to be in that bracket.
I did exactly the same thing with basketball. Got to like 16-17 and went, I could either try and pursue basketball or go and learn how to be a physio.
Exactly,
which was a lot more appealing.
Yeah. You pivoted into a notoriously easy way of making a living of being an actor. That looks like that's the easy option. I'll take that.
I can't see myself being a professional boxer, so I'm going to be almost as rare an opportunity. I'm going to go and do acting.
How did that start then? Was that like, were you doing the two things at the same time? Or
I stopped boxing when I was about 17. My dad was always very supportive of my boxing and he would always drive me. I lived in Sussex and my gym was in Brighton, sort of like half an hour every day. But then he would sit in the car park and wait to take me home. So he was very supportive and he, you know, I can never fault him for that. But I think he did it knowing that I was ultimately going to walk away from it one day, and perhaps without pushing me to do something else, kind of pushed me to do something else by aiding me in the thing that I wanted to do. Because I think if I had turned around at an earlier age and said to my dad, I want to be an actor, and he said, great, I would have gone, actually, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
That's a smart man.
Yeah.
He had that in the back of his mind, like, yeah. Say yes to boxing. And
I mean, he tells me that now. It's probably bullshit. But, yeah.
Complete chance. Yeah. That's what dads do, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Blaggers.
I stopped boxing then probably when I was about 17, and I'd done so bad in school because I had thought for the longest time that I was going to be a boxer. So I just was like, well, I don't need to do any of this school stuff at all for this career path. And then when that fell through, I was like, well, I'm not going to do anything now. So I started working with my brother who builds fences, which was the hardest work I've ever done to this day. And there is nothing that will make you figure out what you want to do more than doing a job you fucking hate. Yeah, yeah. And I quickly was like, I don't want to be on my deathbed and go, should I have tried? And that ultimately was what spurred me into doing an audition for something. And
did you just sort of think, I'm going to give that a go then? You hadn't kind of gone to the youth clubs or
Well, weirdly, now I'm in a position where young people come up to me and they say, what advice do you have about being an actor? And there really is no, there's nothing you can do other than
boxer.
Just, yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. But to just be an actor and like, just do it.
Yeah,
you know, find out whatever's near That's you. It. And you never know what opportunities will come from
it's
that.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's like you don't have to have, like a lot of things in life, you have to go and qualify to a certain extent. A lot of it probably comes down to talent's element, but then how much do you want to do it, I suppose?
I think with acting as well, the only thing you can really bring is your, it sounds such a wanky thing to say.
It's good, we love it.
The only thing you really bring to a project is your own history and your own experiences, so just go and live your life
and you call upon it's just the ability to call upon them though. But it's interesting you say you were useless at school and didn't do, and then you ended up playing a kid back at school again.
I know. Yeah.
It was like one of your first big jobs. Yeah. Sex education.
Totally. That's kind of what we're training for now at the moment, because you're in the process of filming that right now, aren't you?
Series three.
Four. I know, I can't believe
it
as well.
That is interesting.
Has it gone really quick? Does it feel like it's kind of raced through?
It does. I mean, it's been my 20s. So, I mean, we did season one when I was 22. I'm 25 now. Or maybe I was 21. I think I was 21. And I just remember thinking, this is a show that no one's going to see at all. Why would people take interest in this? And maybe that's just the cynic in me. But
I mean, I think a lot of people do that when they start jobs like that, though, that are very, because it's not been done before. It's very different. It's like real kind of, not hit and miss, but like, it can go one or two ways.
It totally is.
And I reckon it's a healthier way of starting, embarking on those projects as well. Like I tend to do that as like a general day-to-day mindset of like, don't hype anything up. Don't expect anything out of anything, because in my mind, it's like you can only be disappointed if it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just do it and do it well and something comes of it, then great.
The business is so fickle. It's just, you know, it's built upon people saying, you know, get ready, it's about to change, everything's about to change, and then nothing happening, which is...
Yeah, you don't want to let yourself be kind of like led along by that, otherwise you're just constantly waiting for something.
Just wait after this podcast.
Yeah,
blow up.
They'll be saying, Joe who?
But super interesting character arc for your character in sex education, though. Going from like the bully, how does that in between each of those series, because you're basically playing a completely different character who you played in the first series, how does that, like, how do you sort of change your viewpoint on getting into that?
I'm such a lazy actor. I do the bare minimum I possibly can.
Read the page, I can do that, I can say those words.
Does like, do you think that the boxing side of things helped in a way, because like the way of like like the way you kind of envisage like a bully moving around the place would be like the swagger of a boxer and stuff like that. Do you reckon that any of those physical things that you've done, like you said earlier, it's like you turn up with your own history and your own experiences. Do you reckon that seeps into it all?
The thing that I think I learned from boxing is real physicality, and that was sort of my movement training that I never did, because I never went to drama school or did any linear training of any kind. So boxing for me was like a real way for me to learn that, or use that muscle in my brain and train it for picking up movement and things like that. And again, I've never made a conscious decision about Adam's walking, but I think to a degree subconsciously, it's obviously manifested itself in a really instinctual way. And
I hope we haven't ruined season four now. You'll be there going, how do I walk?
Exactly.
There'll be loads of weird like threads on the internet going, his walk changed from three
suddenly
to four.
Like episode three, he just couldn't walk anymore.
Oh, God.
One thing that I wasn't actually aware of, but there's an intimacy coordinator in sex education. Yeah. Is that like... Because I suppose when you watch something on a show, I guess it's a good thing that you don't know that they're there because that shows that they've done their job. Mm. But is that, what's that like, having to do those kinds of scenes? And like, I would find it daunting, but I'm not an actor. So
you would find what daunting?
Just the whole
the
like,
scene itself.
Yeah, the scene, knowing that everyone's going to watch it, like having someone, but is it having
also
someone
people
there?
In the room when you're doing it? I suppose that's, is that a lot of what the intimacy coordinator helps with? It's like trying to make sure there's only the people that you need in there and make sure you're comfortable with it and they're comfortable with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they haven't, I mean, you can imagine 10, 15 years ago, just like, yeah, go on, have sex, in quotation marks, we're going to watch it.
Yeah, definitely 10, 15 years ago, but that definitely still happens now. You know, that's there's still productions where an intimacy coordinator isn't a thing. And I've done jobs with and without them, and it's definitely better with them, in my opinion. It just makes everyone feel more comfortable, safer, makes conversations easier, which are ultimately very hard and awkward and stupid. Yeah. But I mean, I'm definitely moving out of, and I spoke to you about this, but moving out of doing sex scenes now, because I just feel like they're kind of completely unnecessary in many ways. And I just think, I don't know why, like, I don't even want to see my ass going up and down. Why does anyone else?
No, I mean, the beginning of sex is enough.
Exactly.
To for the audience to go, I know what they're going to do now. And then you can cut. You don't need to. Yeah, you're right.
And there's so many amazing actors that, you know, extremely good careers that just had, I think, probably the same thought of, why do this? There's no need to do this at all. There's a weird perversion that audiences have with wanting to see people have sex on screen. Well,
Matt Smith came out openly and talked about, even before the first episode of the new House of the Dragon, he was like, there's just too much sex in it.
That's a show jam-packed full of sex.
Yeah. It's wild.
There is a sort of want for it now, I suppose, within audiences. There's definitely with some shows there is an expectancy of, you know, an audience coming in wanting to see something. And I suppose, you know, the Hollywood model and the reason why you get all these sequels and things like that is because they know it will work and it will bring people back. So if a formula worked before for 10 seasons with Game of Thrones, I'm sure they would think, why wouldn't they?
Yeah. For you, like, when you've had to do sex scenes, have you found like exercise and training, not necessarily specifically for it, but like it helps in terms of, you know, people are looking at you, like the confidence you feel within yourself.
So do you mean, will I like train for a sex?
Yeah, but not that you specifically train for it, but do you feel like being
on
active?
Top of the scene or something.
Yeah, like do you try and sort of maintain a routine of exercise? Does that ever enter your mind in terms of the way it would make you feel away from it?
I mean, I'm quite happy to, when I do get my kit off at work, I'm quite happy to look however I do. I don't think I've ever like tried to tone up for a particular scene or anything like that. In fact, I just finished a job. I said to the director, I had to do this scene. This is for SAS, Rogue Heroes. Maybe I shouldn't say this. I'm saying it. And I come up onto a roof at one point and I've got my top off. And I said to the director, I'm going to really push my gut out for this. And he went, okay. And that was it. And I deliberately was like trying
that
to push.
balloon.
Yeah, because I thought this is like an old World War II dude that's living off like just alcohol and just nothing. Yeah. He's probably gonna be bloated and
totally
nice.
I do look back now and I'm like, am I gonna look like a toad? In the moment, I'm very happy to just let it hang, but then afterwards, maybe I'm a bit more tedious about it.
Yeah. In that instance, though, it is like saying it's more relevant. None of those guys are sitting around like jacked, waiting around in the desert, waiting to fight. No.
Well, the SAS one in particular was hard because we were filming in the Sahara Desert in Morocco, and it was like 50 degrees, and you had to have a real level of conditioning just for 12-hour days out in that boiling hot sun, which was completely inescapable. You really became a sort of chemist with your own body in terms of really figuring out how much water you needed to drink and like treading that line between not enough and too much. Because if you drank too much water, then your body would just immediately flush itself of everything, and then you'd just get heat stroke because you had no, you know, salt or electrolytes or anything. And that was a hard lesson to learn, especially when you're so far removed from like a hospital or anything. It was pretty full on. It was definitely not anything that people in that actual time period, the North Africa campaign and World War II experience, but it was pretty hard for
me. I guess you have to be able to do the scene and make the best of the work. So like, it's important for you to take it into account rather than thinking, get as close to the real experience as possible. Because I read the book and there's guys that have like been separated from the rest of the group and have trekked for like 4 days and had like a thimble worth of water each day in order to just survive. So I'm sure had you gone down that approach, you'd been get up on that roof. You're like, nah.
We did like a 2 week boot camp before where we were just sort of doing hiking in the desert. And it was, we had to do it at like 6 o'clock in the morning because the moment it got to like 8 or 9, it was like God just tore the thermostat out of the wall and just went crazy because it was just unbearable. It was like opening the oven door constantly.
Yeah.
Just reminded me of when I think we saw a clip from one of our other clients. There was a clip trying to run away from an explosion and like in the middle of the day in the heat.
This is someone who's in it.
Jacob. Back like running in the heat with all the luggage, like, all your stuff on.
Yeah.
I was just like, so let alone the actual the TV show. Like I was just feeling sick watching you have to do that.
Yeah. And even like a thing like driving an open top car, it's so hot you're just like shaking against
hours and hours and hours. They'll do that. I mean, you probably had to do
it. Crazy sandstorms that would just blow in and everyone just had to basically stay still so you didn't lose everyone. Because it was just
wild.
Completely
crazy. They just like hit the floor.
It was crazy. And actors had told me that because Morocco is just quite a popular place for filming now. And they'd said, you know, it's going to be pretty rough out there, especially if you're filming in the summer, which all the locals were like, what are you doing? Why are you here?
I'd like to know that process of just being the chemist for your body. Like, how was it? It's like, right, that's a bit yellow today. We'll just a little bit more.
I figured out that if I had half a Barocca in the morning, because you know, like Barocca as well, I don't want to slag Barocca off.
It's a big sponsor of ours.
Levi's and Barocca.
Yeah.
But a whole Barocca, my cousin told me this, who's a doctor. It's basically just like you're having an expensive piss.
That makes sense because you have one and it looks like the way it went in.
It comes out looking like Barocca.
It's too much for your body to do, so you just end up.
Add in a bit extra just in case. You'd rather give someone too much than too little.
Yeah. But I would have a half in the morning because that I was like, well, at least half, maybe my body can hold on to that for more. And I'd drink maybe 2 litres until midday. The other half of Barocca, Dioralite.
Yes.
And then another 2 litres, and that just about got me through.
Sounds like How to Survive at Glastonbury.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, Dioralite is that's the ultimate. I'm on holiday in the med as a kid with your family and you get sick. Dad's like, right, we've got to go to the pharmacy, get a Dioralite out.
I'd say like from like the conversations we've had in the gym, that your awareness of things like that in terms of generally how to look after yourself and certain elements of your lifestyle is like a lot better than most people that we see.
Interestingly, it's more of a health anxious thing. My dad is diabetic and I would always see him constantly checking in with where he was in the day in terms of his blood sugars and so on. So that always made, I guess it just kind of gave me this thing of having to always check where I am and how I'm feeling. And also my mum had bowel cancer and she died from that. So that's always been like a big thing of constantly checking in and seeing where I'm at in terms of health. So that's probably where it comes from more than anything else.
Yeah. It's good stuff to learn though. Found like I've only come across that term you just use like the health anxiety recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time, like most of the time I'm sort of feel fairly stable, fairly level, but that I was like, oh shit. Like, I 100% have that.
Oh really?
Oh yeah, man. Like I've got like the history of like heart conditions in my family.
Right.
And I was on holiday in France and I'd eaten like way more cheese than I should have. In the space of 10 minutes, convinced myself. I was like, I need to be ready.
And have you had that anxious thought since then?
Yeah, but it's like now I'd known, I think I read about it. I can't remember what I was reading, but it just popped up and I was like, I hadn't kind of assigned it a name or even really acknowledged it properly. And I do go and get checkups for my heart. I go see the doctor and I've got like high cholesterol and stuff, but...
What's the family history?
So just like basically all the men have heart attacks,
right?
In essence, if you're going to boil it down.
Like around 40 years old as well.
Yeah, right? Like my granddad, my cousin, my dad all had them. And my dad had one on the way back from the gym. He said he felt like his arm was floating and he looked and he was like, he was holding the steering wheel and was like, it felt like his left arm was just like floating up. And then he said he felt like someone was pressing his chest really like right in the middle of it. And if you do it, it's like quite a sharp pain. And he was just like, what is this? And he got home, my mum was like, take aspirin. And then they rushed him to the hospital and he's fine. And I'm like, because like they put the stent in and did everything. It's like, cause you got here in a good time. And because your wife was like, have aspirin, that's probably saved your life.
These sound like very rational anxieties though, from both of you. This is not like hypochondria.
Yeah. Oh no, but it's just like, I didn't have a thing for it. Like I didn't have a name for it. And like you saying it then reminded me, like I had read it and I was like,
But do you find there's a fine line between what you're doing is really proactive? Yeah, it comes with an anxiety reaction before, but then you're reacting really well by checking up and doing things. So, and you look up to an elder and like, oh, they're sick. So no, they're just monitoring.
Do you find like when you monitor it and when you check on any of those things, you just feel more at ease in general?
I would definitely go through like there's an ebb and flow to my health anxiety. And to be honest, I'm in a really good place now where I haven't had a kind of anything trigger it for a long, long time. But especially with the issue, especially with bowel cancer, is that it's such a taboo subject to talk about because it's all to do with your shit. And I have a tendency to talk quite openly about my bowel habits, even in a situation where that's not socially acceptable. I will bring it up.
Well, we were talking about it in the gym. Was it yesterday?
Me and you.
I was telling you the story about me in the queue for Jules Holland and about when I basically shat my pants.
But it's funny, isn't it?
I just about managed to not do it, but it was the most stressful moment of my whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
But your poo can tell so much about you.
Yeah, totally.
You can tell straight away, you look down and go, I've had too much fat today. Or going further, you go, that actually doesn't look good at all.
Yeah.
But people just... Imagine like people like our parents' age, like, oh, that's fine, it's poo, I ain't talking about it.
And that's the main problem though, is like, I think it's definitely getting better now, but I think bowel cancer and things like that ravaged our parents' generation because that was just not something that you spoke about at all. I think it's definitely getting better now. We just did a campaign with Bowel Cancer UK about getting supermarkets to post on the packaging of toilet roll the symptoms of bowel cancer.
That's so clever, actually.
It was like M&S were the ones to lead it, and it was really great.
You always want to read something on the toilet as well.
Exactly, yeah.
How mad is that, though, that's... I just thought that's so stupid that it's not there already.
You literally could save your life. And if you have like a history of bowel cancer in your family like I do, then you should definitely get checked.
Do you find like stepping away from it slightly, but keeping on that thread of anxiety, mental health kind of stuff, do you find that exercise plays a role in general?
Oh, definitely.
Just of how you feel and how you manage all that kind of thing.
Definitely. I think if ever I'm feeling anxious going for a walk or doing something like that, it just does help, right? Yeah. We probably all know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll go through periods of my life, as I was saying before, like this is the first time for a good few years that I've got stuck into exercising now. And I think my health anxiety got pretty bad at a certain point just because I wasn't taking care of myself. So
But it seems to be that it needs to get to that point a lot of the time before it's like, I'm going to go for a walk. And how simple is it to go for a walk?
Yeah, but I think it also plays into, you know, when you feel anxious or you feel stressed or scared, you just want to crawl into a ball, don't you, and stay inside and not do anything. So, you know, pushing yourself out of that place that you think makes you feel safe is actually the best course of action. Yeah. But I love to train early on in the day.
Yeah.
Because then I'm like, nothing's going to be as hard as that for the rest of the
exactly,
day.
Yeah. And it's out of the way. Like you could have stayed in bed till 9, but you got up at 7:30, trained, you're done by 9.
Yeah.
You got the rest of your day ahead of you. Yeah. I'm the same.
Yeah.
You're done.
I just find like people that leave it so late in the day, it's like a looming. It's a thing waiting for you. Yeah. Just like sitting at the end of a corridor. Yeah, it's like, we've got to get to that thing.
That's Monday to Friday. We're like, oh, fuck, I'm flat out 7 to like 12. I can't train. I can't do any exercise.
Yeah,
we do
it, yeah.
Now you can make me do a podcast. I just want to train.
Did you take up tennis recently or was that something that you always did?
I took up tennis because of in retaliation to nothing else.
You're smiling or something as you're saying it.
Yeah. I'm just dog shit. Like, I'm just terrible.
But tennis is such a thing that, like, it really highlights the things you can't do. Like, as soon as I'm like, yeah, this looks all right, and then I'll do it, like, why is that not happening?
I've wanted to start for a long time because whenever I'll travel for work, there's always a tennis court somewhere, and I always walk past and think, oh, I wish I could just...
It's nice hotels you're staying in, is it?
Yeah.
It is a leveler. Like, someone that's really good can show you up. If I play against a really good tennis player, I'm not winning 1 point.
You can't do anything.
Are you aiming to, like, play tennis just to be having fun, or do you want to, like, get good at it?
I'd definitely like to do some, like, amateur challenges or something. Yeah, why not?
Should we make that the goal for the training for the next year, to get you on the tour?
Hang on, the tour? Because the tour is like...
The ATP tour. You go to the ones that not so many people are playing in. get more points, and then your points accumulate throughout the year, and then you can play at like bigger events. This is what we're going to do from now.
Do they ever do pro-ams?
That's what I was thinking. I don't know.
That would be good, because I know they do the old boys play, and they like hit the ball up and catch it in their pocket and like hit two balls, and all that stuff's great. Yeah, I used to love that. But yeah, bit of a pro-am.
They do. One of our other clients was talking about this. So before Wimbledon, at the Hurlingham
Club had it.
There was you could pay for a ticket, but in that ticket you get to go and play with like all the pros turn up for like an evening in like the 2 weeks before Wimbledon or something. Because then it's just that it's knocking a ball over a net.
You've clearly, though, Connor, you've got like a lot of drive to do stuff. Like you want to be good at shit and want to learn. And
I do like to get in over my head at times and figure it out. I'm writing a film at the moment, which is, again, I'm throwing myself into one of the hardest things I could possibly be doing. It's ridiculously hard. Yeah. I actually came away from it. I was doing some today and I was so tired. So coming here and doing this has been a good break away from it. I think I definitely want to be out there and telling stories, and like I love history. So I love being able to show people parts of history that they might not otherwise have heard of, buried deep down. I'm such a huge cinephile as well, so I definitely want to toss my hat in the ring more so than just with acting. I think
anything with the writing you want to talk about here,
is it history?
Because I've literally got a book just here, well, I've just bought it the other day because I want to learn more about it, and it's like the short history of Europe, starting at like ancient Greece all the way through. About 20 pages in.
What do you know?
He's still in ancient Greece.
What can you teach us?
Just about Julius Caesar went over and married Cleopatra.
I didn't know that.
And then, you didn't know that?
That's quite famous. Yeah, that, isn't it?
I'm just saying things to make you feel better.
Oh, are you okay?
There you go.
didn't actually know.
But the agency of an actor now to make something seems a lot easier. A journey, obviously, other than the actual writing of it, but like getting stuff made and like putting your hat in the ring and certain, like getting producers to work with you and stuff, compared to like, again, 10, 15 years ago where it was only like a set few people, production companies that were making stuff. Now it's like everyone seems to have their own production company.
Yeah.
Every actor is writing a script, which might be diluting the pool a little bit, but also it's quite...
I think there's no better time to be capitalizing on that, because it's just a complete feeding ground out there now with all these streaming services looking for material. Chucking money at stuff. Chucking money at shit.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about with Maisie. It's like the same people are writing basically the same film over and over again. And because, as you said earlier with Game of Thrones, because the formula works, why would they change it? Chuck more money at it. But actually what we want and what the films that are really kind of breaking through are the stories that you didn't really, like, you haven't heard before.
Or they've just been written so well that you don't realise.
You don't realise that it's, exactly.
I think that's more likely.
Did you find, you were talking about, the history and the researching side of things, because with the show, with SAS Rogue Heroes, it's real. It's about, real people. Did you get kind of sucked into all the literature surrounding it and really, when you're playing a real person, I imagine you want to, learn about them as much as you can to try and make sure you do it justice or pick up the right things.
Definitely, I mean, that's my favourite part of the job, really. I think if I could just do that and not the acting, I'd be pretty happy.
Learn loads about someone, then go, right, I know it all now. So...
And get the money, get paid.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah. And then go. I mean, it's the first time I've ever played a real person of history, and I think I definitely just thought, I'm not going to do an impression of this guy. Uh-huh. I'm just going to fucking read as much as I can, figure out his essence, and then bring that. Yeah. And if people don't like it, I don't give a shit.
Nice. Everyone knows about the SAS, you know what it is.
I mean, it's like,
but he's never thought about how it's
a truly unbelievable story about what these maniacs did. Driving across the desert using the stars as navigation, fighting against sandstorms, parachuting in when no one had ever parachuted behind enemy lines before. Who has the initiative to put themselves into a situation like that and think it's going to work out? It's just crazy.
It's one thing being the guy that thought of doing it, and then the blokes that have so much trust and faith in that person to go, I'll do that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They showed it to their SAS association, which is like all the old boys.
They're the ones you want to impress then.
And they were delighted and really happy and excited. So, ultimately, we made this project for them. The rest is whatever,
We need to come on to everyone's favourite part, which is the funny and or embarrassing stories.
Just for the cheap seats, this one.
It's my favourite.
We've gone through some real good in-depth stuff.
We do it
for Dave.
I have a story back from my boxing days about... there was one guy... When I was boxing, I was obviously quite young, and I was often sparring against full-grown men. At the time of this event, I was probably 15. The next youngest person was maybe like 16. And then it was straight up to like 25. And then you guys know the natural strength that someone gains.
Absolutely.
From 16 to 25.
You'd feel bad just crazy. Punching a 15-year-old.
Yeah, really nah, they didn't.
Win's a win, mate.
These guys at that gym in particular, I mean, it was the fondest, one of the best experiences of my life, training in that gym and learning from those guys. And I definitely got good at boxing very quickly because they didn't take it easy on me in any way, shape or form. But I was sparring against this guy who was the first guy I ever sparred against ever, who like busted my nose when I was 12. And he also will have no idea that I'm talking about him if he ever listened to this. He's not that kind of guy to realize that he did this. We actually became quite good friends because eventually I got to a point where I could give it back to him as good as he gave it to me. But the last sort of month of me training, I remember it was the only time we were sparring in a tiny little boxing ring. There's nowhere to hide.
You can literally punch
the other person from both sides of the ring.
Yeah.
And we were sparring in that, and it was the closest I ever came to getting knocked out. And this guy, we'll call him Clark, was lighting me up in this boxing gym. And like the only reason I was staying on my feet was because he was literally hitting me up as I was falling side to side.
Like a balloon getting battered around.
Literally, it was unbelievable. And he hit me so hard with this crazy uppercut, and my head swung back, and suddenly I went to move my legs and nothing happened. I thought, oh fuck, I'm about, this is what it feels like to get knocked out. And I remember my coach screaming in from the side, Connor, are you okay? Connor, are you okay? But it was sort of like, Connor, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? I was thinking in my head, just say no, just say no, just say no, just say no. And I went, I'm fine. And then as that happened, this looping overhand punch came in, and no word of a lie, he hit me so hard that the shockwave of the punch made me fart in front of the whole, in front of the whole gym. And we were doing this thing called shark tanking, which is, or shark cage, whatever you want to call it, where basically every minute you get a new partner. So
everyone's standing on the edge of the ring.
But the one person who's sparring, which was me. So everyone's got new energy coming in.
And all
I heard was one guy go, you just fart. And I just remember thinking, you try showing up to a boxing gym if you farted after getting haymaked.
Everything you just said makes me not want to go to a boxing gym.
Never.
It sounds so brutal.
That punch was actually so hard that not only did I fart, but it broke my jaw. So the ricochet of my jaw breaking sent a fart in my arms. And now
you farted so hard you broke your jaw.
And to this day, my jaw is just like completely fucked. And
every time you open it to a certain extent, fart.
That is his jaw, everybody. That is Connor's jaw.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Jaw. Someone knocking on the window.
Yeah.
That's mad.
That is mad.
Good old Clark.
Good old Clark. Cheers, yeah. Clark.
Good old Clark.
That's probably like, I've got to try and absorb that. So of all the stories I've heard, I'm just like trying to take all that in.
It's hard when there's violence involved on a minor.
Yeah, on a minor. How old are you again?
Yeah. I was like 15.
15.
He was like
and your
36.
Dad's sitting outside in the car going, when's he out?
Yeah. He's farting again, is he? Yeah. Was it an immediate knowledge of the jaw going? Were you like, oh, fuck?
I mean, there was so much going on. I thought I was about to get knocked out. I just farted. I'd broken my jaw.
As the youngest one there as well, you're probably like spending a lot of your time trying to be cooler or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Make yourself seem
not,
better.
Not stand out.
I was always like, I was quite shy as a kid, and I thought when I started boxing, I want to be the quiet kid that they're like, you know, watch out for that guy in the corner. And ultimately, I was just a quiet kid who just ended up farting.
You wanted to be dangerous Connor that stands in the corner, actually.
And I was
farting.
That's what you're known for. I guess we better start wrapping it up. Like, what's in the pipeline for you? What's coming up next? I think there's a fair few things by the sounds of it.
Rolling Barbie the movie.
Yeah, Barbie, yeah. Barbie was an amazing experience. I got to work with two of the reasons why I got into acting, which was Will Ferrell and Ryan Gosling, both of which were, when I met them, 100 times better than I was expecting. Oh, really? Amazing.
That's just so good.
Unbelievable, so good. Charming, funny, witty men that are really generous with their time.
I feel like that's going to make a lot of people happy just hearing that.
Yeah.
That they are what you
want
them
to be. I mean, they say never meet your heroes, but if you do meet your heroes and
they're a legend, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that like in general, like as a set with all those people? Because it was like the cast list is mad, isn't
it?
Like
it was amazing. It was definitely a new playground that I was rolling around in with people that were really talented in comedy, and it was hard keeping up, but ultimately, you know, I'm so grateful that I even got to have that experience. And working with Greta Gerwig is just another dream come true. I mean, that anyone that got to work on that project really hit gold. Pink gold.
Amazing.
Long may it
continue.
Can't
wait to watch
mate.
The pink gold.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, mate. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Connor.
Swindells.
With a big D.
Oh, good Lord.